After this upset, my lady kept to her room. As she never offered to descend to breakfast next morning, I went to ask whether she would have some carried up. No, she replied peremptorily. The same question was repeated at dinner and tea, and again on the morrow after, and received the same answer. Mr. Linton, on his part, spent his time in the library and did not inquire concerning his wife's occupations. Isabella and he had an hour's interview, during which he tried to elicit from her some sentiment of proper horror for Heathcliff's advances. But he could make nothing of her evasive replies, and was obliged to close the examination unsatisfactorily. Adding, however, a solemn warning that if she were so insane as to encourage that worthless suitor, it would dissolve all bonds of relationship between herself and him. Mrs. Linton, on the third day, unbarred her door, and having finished the water in her pitcher and decanter, desired a renewed supply, for she believed she was dying. That I set down as a speech meant for Edgar's ears. I believe no such thing, so I kept it to myself, and brought her some tea and dry toast. She ate and drank eagerly, and sank back on her pillow again, clenching her hands and groaning. "Oh, I will die," she exclaimed, "since no one cares anything about me. Oh, where is that apathetic being?" "Among his books," I replied, "since he has no other society." I should not have spoken so if I had known her true condition, but I could not get rid of the notion that she had acted a part of a disorder.
"Among his books," she cried, confounded, "and I dying? I am on the brink of the grave. My God, does he know how I am altered?"
continued she, staring at a reflection in a mirror hanging on the opposite wall.
"Is that Catherine Linton?"
She could not bear the notion which I had put into her head of Mr. Linton's philosophical resignation. Tossing about, she increased her feverish bewilderment to madness, and tore the pillow with her teeth. Then, raising herself up all burning, desired that I would open the window. We were in the middle of winter, the wind blew strong from the northeast, and I objected. Both the expressions flitting over her face and the changes of her moods began to alarm me terribly. But sliding from the bed before I could hinder her, she crossed the room, walking very uncertainly, threw back the casement and bent out, careless of the frosty air that cut about her shoulders as keen as a knife. I entreated and finally attempted to force her to retire, but I soon found her delirious strength much surpassed mine. There was no moon, and everything beneath lay in misty darkness. Not a light gleamed from any house, far or near. All had been extinguished long ago, and those at Wuthering Heights were never visible. Still, she asserted she caught their shining.
"Look," she cried eagerly. "That's my room with a candle in it, and the trees swaying before it. And the other candle is in Joseph's garret. Joseph sits up waiting till I come home, that he may lock the gate. Well, he'll wait a while yet. It's a rough journey, and a sad heart to travel it. And we must pass by Gimmerton Kirk to go that journey. We've braved its ghosts often together, and dared each other to stand among the graves and ask them to come. But Heathcliff, if I dare you now, will you venture? If you do, I'll keep you. I'll not lie there by myself. They may bury me 12 feet deep and throw the church down over me, but I won't rest there till you are with me. I never will."
Suddenly, I heard the rattle of the door handle and Mr. Linton entered.
"Oh, sir," I cried, "my poor mistress is ill, and she quite masters me. I cannot manage her at all. Pray come and persuade her to go to bed. Forget your anger, for she is hard to guide any way but her own."
"Catherine,
ill,"
he said, hastening to us.
"Shut the window, Ellen."
He was silent, The haggardness of Mrs. Linton's appearance smote him speechless, and he could only glance from her to me in horrified astonishment.
"Ah, you are come, are you, Edgar Linton?" she said with angry animation. "You are one of those things that are ever found when least wanted, and when you are wanted, never. I suppose we shall have plenty of lamentations now. I see we shall. But they can't keep me from my narrow home out yonder. My resting place, where I'm bound before spring is over."
"Catherine, what have you done?" commenced the master. "Am I nothing to you any more? Do you love that wretch Heath?"
"Hush!" cried Mrs. Linton. "Hush this moment. You mention that name, and I end the matter instantly by a spring from the window. Return to your books. I'm glad you possess a consolation, for all you had in me is gone."
"Her mind wanders, sir," I interposed, "to calm him." But the master was not consoled and bid me fetch the doctor. I set off directly, and in passing the garden to reach the road, at a place where a bridle hook is driven into the wall, I saw something white, moving irregularly, evidently by another agent of the wind. Notwithstanding my hurry, I stayed to examine it. My surprise and perplexity were great to discover, by touch more than vision, Miss Isabella's spaniel, Fanny, suspended to a handkerchief and nearly at its last gasp. I quickly released the animal and lifted it into the garden. While untying the knot round the hook, it seemed to me that I repeatedly caught the beat of horses' feet galloping at some distance. But there were such a number of things to occupy my reflections that I hardly gave the circumstance a thought. I soon returned to the Grange with Dr. Kenneth. By now, Catherine lay in a troubled sleep. Her husband had succeeded in soothing the access of frenzy. He now hung over her pillow, watching every shade and every change of her painfully expressive features. The doctor, on examining the case for himself, spoke hopefully to Mr. Linton of its having a favourable termination if we could only preserve around her perfect and constant tranquillity. To me, he signified the threatening danger was not so much death as permanent alienation of intellect. Oh, I did not close my eyes that night, nor did Mr. Linton. Indeed, we never went to bed. And the servants were all up long before the usual hour. Every one was active but Miss Isabella, and they began to remark how sound she slept. Her brother, too, asked if she had risen, and seemed impatient for her presence, and hurt that she showed so little anxiety for her sister-in-law. Then one of the maids, a thoughtless girl who'd been up on an early errand to Gimmerton, came panting upstairs, open-mouthed, and dashed into the chamber, crying,
"Oh, dear! Oh, dear, what will we have next? Master! Master, our young lady!"
"Speak lower, Mary. What is the matter?" said Mr. Linton. "What ails your young lady?"
"She's gone! She's gone! Yon Heathcliff's run off with her!"
gasped the girl. "That is not true!" exclaimed Linton, rising in agitation. "It cannot be! How has the idea entered your head?"
"Why, I met on the road a lad that fetches milk here," she stammered, "and he asked whether we went in trouble at the Grange. Well, I thought he meant for the Mrs. Sickness, so I answered yes. Then, says he, there's somebody gone after him, I guess. Well, I stayed. He saw and knew naught about it, and he told our gentleman and a lady had stopped to have a horse's shoe fastened at a blacksmith shop 2 miles out of Gimmerton, not very long after midnight. And how the blacksmith's lass had got up to spy who they were. Well, she knew them both directly."
Mr. Linton became strangely calm. "Are we to try any measures for overtaking and bringing her back?" I inquired. "She went of her own accord," answered the master. "She has a right to go if she pleased. trouble me no more about her. Hereafter she is only my sister in name, not because I disown her, but because she has disowned me. For 2 months the fugitives remained absent. In those 2 months, Mrs. Linton encountered and conquered the worst shock of what was denominated a brain fever. No mother could have nursed an only child more devotedly than Edgar tended her. Oh, I thought myself she might recover so waited on as she was. And there was double cause to desire it, for on her existence depended that of another. We cherished the hope that in a little while Mr. Linton's heart would be gladdened, and his land secured from a stranger's gripe by the birth of an heir. I should mention that Isabella sent to her brother, some 6 weeks from her departure, a short note announcing a marriage with Heathcliff. Linton did not reply to this, I believe, and in a fortnight more I got a long letter which I considered odd, coming from the pen of a bride just out of honeymoon. I'll read it, for I kept it yet. Any relic of the dead is precious, if they were valued living.
"Dear Ellen," it begins, "I came last night to Wuthering Heights, and heard for the first time that Catherine has been and is yet very ill. I must not write to her, I suppose, and my brother is either too angry or too distressed to answer what I send him. Still, I must write to somebody, and the only choice left me is you. I want to ask you one simple question, Nelly. Is Mr. Heathcliff a man? If so, is he mad? And if not, is he a devil? I shan't tell my reasons for making this inquiry, but I beseech you to explain, if you can, what I have married. That is when you call to see me, and you must call Ellen very soon."
After reading those words, I made straight for the house and entered without knocking. Oh, there never was such a dreary, dismal scene as the formerly cheerful house presented. The young lady already partook of the pervading spirit of neglect which encompassed her. Her pretty face was wan and listless, her hair uncurled. Hindley was not there. Mr. Heathcliff sat at a table, turning over some papers in his pocketbook. But he rose when I appeared, asked how I did, quite friendly, and offered me a chair. He was the only thing that seemed decent, and I thought he never looked better. So much had circumstances altered their positions that he would certainly have struck a stranger as a born and bred gentleman, and his wife as a thorough little slattern. She came forward eagerly to greet me and asked about my mistress. I told as much as I thought proper of her illness. "Mrs. Linton is now just recovering," I said. "She'll never be like she was, but her life is spared." Here, Heathcliff intervened. "Before you leave this house, Nelly, I must exact a promise from you that you'll get me an interview with her. Consent or refuse, I will see her. What do you say?" "I say, Mr. Heathcliff," I replied, "that you must not. You never shall through my means. Another encounter between you and the master would kill her altogether." "With your aid, that may be avoided," he continued. But I answered back, "Do not thrust yourself into her remembrance now, when she's nearly forgotten you." "You suppose she has nearly forgotten me?" he said. "Oh, Nelly, you know she has not. If I thought she had, 2 words would comprehend my future: death and hell. Existence after losing her would be hell. If Edgar Linton loved with all the powers of his puny being, he couldn't love as much in 80 years as I could in a day. And Catherine has a heart as deep as I have. It is not in him to be loved like me. How can she love in him what he has not?"
"Catherine and Edgar are as fond of each other as any 2 people can be," cried Isabella with sudden vivacity. "No one has a right to talk in that manner, and I won't hear my brother depreciated in silence."
"Your brother!" is wondrous fond of you too, isn't he? Observed Heathcliff scornfully. He turns you adrift on the world with surprising alacrity.
He is not aware of what I suffer, she replied. I didn't tell him that.
You have been telling him something, then. You have written, have you?
To say that I was married, I did write. You saw the note.
And nothing since?
No. My young lady is looking sadly the worse for a change of condition, I remarked.
Somebody's love comes short in her case, obviously. Whose, I may guess, but perhaps I shouldn't say. I should guess it was her own, said Heathcliff. She degenerates into a mere slut. She is tired of trying to please me uncommonly early. You'd hardly credit it, but the very morrow of our wedding she was weeping to go home. However, she'll suit this house so much better for not being over nice, and I'll take care she does not disgrace me by rambling abroad. I left Wuthering Heights, the unwilling bearer of a letter from Heathcliff to my mistress. Because of it, my journey homeward was sadder than my journey thither, and many misgivings I had ere I could prevail on myself to put the missive into Mrs. Linton's hand.